happy for, you know, that I get to be in such an elite club. You know, want to thank the writers for, you know, putting my name down and punching it out at least. But shocked because, you know, anytime somebody else does something for you, it means a lot.
Well, I mean, it's nerve-wracking, I got to tell you, because, you know, they tell you at a certain time, and you're sitting there, and you're like, man, oh, man, you know, you don't know, obviously, with the last 2 years being very close, and, but, yeah, once you get the call, you can't describe it.
It's the first show of 2016, and for it, we'll discuss the recent Hall of Fame balloting with Joe Posnanski, a noted Hall of Fame authority and voter who's back on the program for a second time. Before delving into the voting results, I began our conversation by asking Joe what best defines the careers of Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza.
Well, I think it's very cool that these two guys are going into the Hall of Fame the same year because they obviously came at baseball from very, very different they took very, very different journeys to the Hall of Fame, I guess you could say. I mean, with Ken Griffey, it was clear he was sort of born into greatness. His father, a very, very good baseball player himself, an all-star. He was the first pick in the draft. He was the kid, junior, before he even reached the big leagues and, you know, played with his dad in his first year. And everybody knew that he was going to be great, and of course, he was great. And then you look at Mike Piazza, and it's pretty much the exact opposite, even though, you know, his father was also a baseball guy, wasn't a player, certainly not a player on Ken Griffey's level, but he was a baseball guy. But you're talking about the 62nd round draft pick, which is there is no 62nd round anymore, and he was essentially drafted by the Dodgers as a personal favor to his father by Tommy Lasorda, someone who had nobody ever thought he was going to even make the big leagues, much less become the star that he became. So, you know, I think of those two as having very different paths to greatness. But they were both obviously amazing players. I mean, you think of Ken Griffey, and there are many, many images that come to mind of his graceful swing and him playing beautiful center field and you know, the joy he played the game with, the you know, hat backward, and, you know, he just sort of represented youth and enthusiasm and fun. And you think of Mike Piazza, and you just think of that powerful swing. I don't think he was by any standard a great defensive catcher, but he was a leader and a guy that played behind the plate for a very long time, was sort of indestructible back there, and was just an absolutely fantastic hitter. Lots and lots of line drives, opposite field shots, and just a fantastic hitter. So, you know, I when I think of those two guys, I think of how different the paths are, but they both end up at Cooperstown.
Series for Griffey. It ties the record for the most in any postseason series with this man, Mr. October, in the 1977 World Series. And if you're going to have someone tie you, it might as well be Griffey.
Lopez wants it away.
And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run! Mike Piazza, and the Mets lead 3-2.
In your Hall of Fame preview column on NBCSports.com, you provided your ballot as a BBWAA voter and also forecasted the percentages these candidates would get. And you accurately predicted the percentages for the two electees right on the nose, with Griffey at 99% and Piazza at 83%. But what surprised you in terms of the results on Wednesday?
Well, I wouldn't say it was anything that was too surprising. There were a couple of things that were a little bit disappointing. You know, I think it was disappointing that neither Jeff Bagwell or Tim Raines made it, even though I thought they, you know, both probably would fall just short, and that's what happened. You know, there was some real hope, especially with Bagwell, that he was going to just get there this year and not have to wait another year like he'll have to wait. He finished, I guess, 15 votes short. So I wouldn't say it was surprising, but it was a little bit disappointing. Tim Raines, I didn't think he was going to get. I think I predicted him to be right at 70 or so, and so he was about where I predicted him to be. I think he's going to get in next year, so largely that was a very positive thing. But again, you know, it would have been nice to see him sort of skip ahead in line and get into Cooperstown. I think the most disappointing one for me was Jim Edmonds,
sorry about
that.
Yeah, he got 2.5%, which is crazy.
Yeah, and that was maybe the fact that I couldn't remember his name is a representative of that. But he was a great player, and I don't think necessarily he's a Hall of Famer, but I think he's close, and I think his case is something that should have been discussed, and he should have made it on to more ballots. I think that's the problem with having these sort of overstuffed ballots is that you really can't. You can't spend a vote on somebody who you would just sort of like to, almost give him I'd like to give him a hall pass for the next couple of years just so we can look more closely at him. You really couldn't do that. I mean, I had 11 that I absolutely wanted to vote for and two or three more that I think were very, very close. And so there was no place for Jim Edmonds, but Jim Edmonds was a terrific player.
Speaking of changes, there have been some notable changes in the recent years to the voting process. That includes reducing the eligibility on the writer's ballot from 15 to 10 years. The number of people on the electorate has been lessened. That just started this year. But based on what you're saying, it seems like you're in favor of increasing or expanding the ballot or expanding the amount of people you can vote for. Are there any other changes you would like to see with the process?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are quite a few changes I'd like to see. I'd like to see the voting base expanded. I think it would be great to have more than just the BBWAA. I would like to see other people who are, intimately involved in watching and analyzing baseball involved. But that's not likely to happen, nor are any of the other changes that I have proposed in the past, including expanding the ballot. And I think when it comes to expanding the ballot, I think more it's for the reasons of your Jim Edmonds. I mean, it's one thing because, Larry Walker was the guy that I had to leave off my ballot that I really didn't want to, that I would have definitely voted for. And, he's sort of treading water. He's not going to get any momentum, I think, in the Hall of Fame, even though I think he is certainly a Hall of Fame caliber player. And part of it is that he, the people that do vote for 10 often leave him off just because he's somebody who's a little bit, just not quite there with some of the other Hall of Fame candidates. So, the Hall of Fame has made itself clear on this. I think they would like to not only maintain high standards, but also maintain the sort of, I don't want to make it sound negative, but the illusion of high standards. And I think they feel like if they expand it to 12, that will give the illusion that they want to increase the population of the Hall of Fame, and they don't really want to. They certainly want to have a very nice event every year where they put in, two, three, four players, but they don't want to change, even in the minds of fans, the very, very high standards that they've managed to achieve. So I don't think there are going to be any changes. And if there are, I think they're going to be much more restrictive changes, kind of like reducing from 15 to 10 in the number of years that people are allowed on the ballot.
Now, what kept Piazza out on his first three tries on the ballot were the rumors of performance-enhancing drug use. And obviously, those whispers weren't strong enough to keep him out for good. Nobody knows who took what and how often. Nobody can definitively say whether Piazza did PEDs or didn't. That's the case for a lot of these guys. It would also be naive to say that certain players from that era are definitely clean. And that's really the confounding and tragic part of the steroid era. what do you think Piazza's election does to the PED issue in terms of how we evaluate candidates, especially with the new streamlined voting group?
Well, I think it was very, very big, and I think it changed the conversation considerably for a couple of reasons. Let's talk about the people like him, and I think guys like him specifically would incorporate Jeff Bagwell, who I think has been kept out of the Hall of Fame for the very same reason, where there were, you know, rumors and whispers about him. Nothing that anybody has ever substantiated or even close. So when that has, for the last 2 or 3 years, that has sort of carried the day, those whispers. And I think when Mike Piazza getting in, the whisper campaign is over. I think that's a very clear indication. You know, he wasn't close. He got in with 83% of the vote. So it was a very clear indication that people, that this new, somewhat younger, more baseball-driven populace of voters, that this group is not going to stand for the whispers, and this group is going to vote in the players that have had the best careers, and not hold them back because of rumors. And I think that's a very, very big statement. It took too long to make that statement, but I'm glad it was made. And I do think that Jeff Bagwell is going to go in next year, and that's going to end another sort of whisper campaign. So that's one level. The second level is going to be, to me, the more interesting one, which is, how is that going to affect the people who are at least somewhat confirmed PED users? Either they failed a test, or they, obviously in the case of Bonds and Clemens, there were court cases and so on and so forth. And I think that's going to be very, very interesting, because at some point everybody's going to have to look in the mirror. We don't know if Mike Piazza or Jeff Bagwell or Craig Biggio or any of these guys use steroids. We don't know. But we're going to have to stop being, you know, living with this illusion that the Baseball Hall of Fame is filled with people who didn't use steroids. There are steroid users in the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's a silly illusion to think that there aren't. And once you realize that there are baseball, you know, Hall of Famers who were steroid users, and probably we'll find, you know, years and years from now that some of them were pretty prominent steroid users. Once that's found, and once you come to that realization, you realize that the only thing you're really punishing Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens for is getting caught. And maybe people are okay with that. Maybe people are, you know, that maybe that's fine with them. But that's a much harder stance to take than this idea, we're keeping out all steroid users. I think with Piazza, with Bagwell, with some of these people who have been suspected unfairly to a large degree, I think that does change that level of the conversation too. So we'll see. I could be completely wrong about that. I do think that we saw a little bit of movement in the Bonds and Clemens Hall of Fame case this year. So it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens with them over the next few years.
Yeah, Bonds received 44.3% of the vote, Clemens 45.2%, so each went up gradually with 6 years remaining on the writer's ballot. But I want to touch on a couple other guys who fell short. And in reading your column, we're in agreement on one guy who I feel has been really underappreciated by the committee up to this point, and that's Curt Schilling. His win total isn't very high, but his strikeout-to-walk ratio is the best of all time. Tom Verducci, I believe, said this on MLB Network recently, that postseason excellence is the equivalent of extra credit. And Schilling, to me, gets a lot of extra credit for what he did with the 93 Phillies, the Diamondbacks in 2001, winning co-MVP of the World Series with Randy Johnson, and along with being with the Red Sox in 2004 and 2007. In your opinion, why does Schilling not get a lot of support?
Well, there are a couple of things I would say about that. First of all, I love Tom, but I think that the idea that postseason success is extra credit is a big flaw in the Hall of Fame voting. It's much, much more than extra credit, and especially as postseason baseball becomes more and more important. Right now, postseason baseball is more important than it's ever been before. You know, it used to be you had to win 100 games or 95 games, 98 games to get into the playoffs in the first place. That's no longer the case. And World Series champions are not determined by how you play in the regular season almost at all anymore. It is almost entirely based on how well you play in October because 10 teams get in now. So postseason baseball should play a massive role in future Hall of Fame voting. It was different when it was Colfax and when it was Gibson and when it was guys like that, you were lucky if you played in the postseason a couple of times in your career. But that's not the case anymore. So I think that Schilling is getting hurt by that. I think Schilling, people are looking at his incredible postseason record and saying, okay, well, that's nice, but it's such an important part of his career and it's such an important part of baseball that it should be a massive, massive consideration when voting for the Hall of Fame. As far as why he hasn't gotten in, I think that there's one clear reason, and you mentioned it. He has a very low win total for Hall of Famers. I mean, 216 wins is certainly not a low win total, but it is low for Hall of Famers. And really, most of the guys in that level were either, Pedro Martinez type of pitchers who were just so utterly dominant that there was no way to keep them out. Dizzy Dean was a guy because he was sort of a cult figure in addition to being a great pitcher and all of that. So that's the biggest reason, I suspect, is that people still want to put way, way too much stock in the win totals for pitchers, even as it's become more and more clear that starting pitchers are going to win fewer and fewer games as the years go on because they're going to pitch fewer and fewer innings and they're going to be more and more relief pitchers. So that's one. The second thing is the one I don't know and don't want to believe to be true, but it's very hard for me to accept. And that is that a lot of people just don't like Curt Schilling. He has been kind of a public, he's made some public missteps, certainly since he's retired. There was sort of the business fiasco that he went through. He's gotten in some Twitter fights. He's been very political, which always sets off half of the nation's population. So, there's a real, and he doesn't mind mixing it up. I mean, he can be a very grating personality. That should have nothing to do with his Hall of Fame case. Absolutely nothing to do with it. And people who are withholding their vote from Curt Schilling because they don't like him and can't look past that are, to me, they're absolutely failing in their mission as Hall of Fame voters. I hope that's not the case. I mean, I don't know that it is. As far as I know, nobody's publicly come out and said, I didn't vote for Curt Schilling because I don't like him. But, you look at his career, you look at his, percentage. Finally, he broke 50% this year. But you look at his career and you look at his percentage, and then you look at somebody like Jack Morris, who was such a darling of the BBWAA, and for all the reasons that Curt Schilling should be. And it makes you wonder. It really makes you wonder why the heck more people aren't voting for him. He did take a nice jump this year, and I'd like to believe that over the next 2 or 3 years, he's going to get up there and get elected.
High drive into deep left field. McReynolds watching. Would you believe a grand slam for Tim Raines? That has to be one of the most incredible stories of the year in any sport. The first day back.
To be one of those stories, if you wrote it for television, they say that's too corny. It'll never work.
Is Tim Raines the type of player who, if he were in his prime today and put up similar numbers to what he did in the 1980s when it comes to stolen bases, stolen base percentage, or stolen base success rate, as well as the amount of times reaching base, would that earn him more praise for his performance and thus would have eventuated into a stronger Hall of Fame candidate?
Well, yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, if he was stealing 80 bases now, I mean, people would go crazy. Nobody steals anything close to that anymore. So that would obviously, he would be an utterly unique player. But I would take it a step further. I think there's no time in baseball history other than the time when he played that he would be overlooked. And the reason he was overlooked in his own time is because he came right as Ricky Henderson was peaking. There's never been a player like Ricky Henderson. There probably never will be another player like Ricky Henderson. And he was placed in the position where Tim Raines found himself constantly being compared to the the incomparable. When you're stealing 80 bases and getting caught, whatever, 8-9 times a year, and another guy stealing 100 bases, well, they're going to look to the other guy. And when you're hitting 15 home runs as a leadoff hitter, which is sensational, but the other guy's hitting 23, well, they're going to look to the other guy. I mean, Ricky Henderson was so good. I think Bill James put it best. He said that you could split Ricky Henderson into two players, he'd be two different Hall of Famers. He was that good. And I think Tim Raines, as anybody will, falls a little short in that comparison. But if you played now, if you played in the, in the 90s, if you played in the 60s, you played in the 70s, he would be viewed for what he is, which is an utterly unique player. And as I think you alluded, he's the greatest percentage base dealer in baseball history. And that's pretty impressive. I mean, the great thing about stealing bases is that you obviously get the extra base, but every time you get caught, you're adding an out. And an out is it's a much bigger penalty than the extra base is a plus. So to be the greatest percentage base dealer in baseball history means he's the greatest base dealer in baseball history.
Alan Trammell received 40.9% in his final year on the ballot. Do you foresee him garnering more favor with the Veterans Committee?
I think so. It all depends on what the Veterans Committee is made of. The Veterans Committee has been a lot of different things through the years. There was a time when the Veterans Committee really was just the living Hall of Famers, and they would vote on it, and nobody was good enough to get in when the living Hall of Famers were voting, because it's just sort of a natural thing. You want to kind of shut the door behind you. So, if there's a panel, and right now there's a very good panel. I don't think they have a very good system in place, because right now it's you have to get 12 out of 16 votes, and you, again, they're limited in the number of votes they're allowed to use, and it's not a very good system at all right now. It's sort of a mathematical mousetrap, I believe I've called it. So it's very, very hard for anybody to get elected, and nobody has gotten elected in the last two veteran committees thing. But when they look at Alan Trammell, and hopefully they'll look at his double play partner Lou Whitaker at the same time, and see how he compares, not to the very, very greatest players, not to Cal Ripken or Otis Wagner, but to the average Hall of Fame shortstop. They'll see he's better than the average Hall of Fame shortstop. That's why I voted for him. I mean, there's been a standard set, what makes a Hall of Fame shortstop. He's better than that standard. He should be in the Hall of Fame. So that's how I view it. It's not how everybody views it, obviously, but I do think he's a guy, because he was a great player, because he was a leader, because he was very well respected in the game. I think he is a guy that's going to get a good look by the Veterans Committee.
We so often talk about the players who are getting underappreciated, who don't get enough support, who deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, who aren't already. On the flip side, are there any players on the current ballot who you feel are getting overvalued?
Well, there is one person who I think is getting dramatically overvalued, but I find myself torn about it, because, one, I don't believe that the Hall of Fame should be, it's a celebration of the game, and I don't think, I think I got caught up when Jack Morris was going through his Hall of Fame journey. I would write, that I didn't think Jack Morris was a Hall of Famer, but I wrote it so many different times that at some point it felt like I was just denigrating Jack Morris, which I didn't really intend to do. Jack Morris was a great pitcher. Yeah, I just didn't think he was worthy of the Hall of Fame. So that's a pretty tight rope to balance, to walk across. But that said, I think Trevor Hoffman is dramatically overvalued. I think Trevor Hoffman is a guy who is a fantastic closer. Loved seeing him pitch, loved dealing with him when I was as a writer, would be thrilled beyond belief if he gets into the Hall of Fame, and when he gets in the Hall of Fame, because I do believe he'll get elected, and will feel nothing but happy for him. I don't see his Hall of Fame case at all. It's basically a 600 save Hall of Fame case, and I don't think saves are a great statistic. I think his career, he was very good at saving games in San Diego, great pitcher's park, for a very long long time. He stayed healthy, which was great. That to me is not a Hall of Fame case. I mean, to me, that's putting the best kicker in the Hall of Fame because he scored the most points or something. I just don't see it. And he didn't score the most points. He scored the second most points. So he's putting the second best, set the kicker with the second most points in the Hall of Fame. I don't see it. That's a specialty position. You should have to transcend the position, in my view. I think there were a lot of closers who were as good, including Billy Wagner, who's on this ballot, who were as good as Trevor Hoffman. I think there's one closer that I would feel very good and very strongly about putting in the Hall of Fame, and that's Mariano Rivera. I don't think anybody else comes close to him, and for a lot of different reasons. So I think he's dramatically overvalued. Again, people disagree with me, and I think they're going to vote him in, and I think that's going to be great. And I'm certainly not upset about it in the least. What makes me upset are when people undervalue guys, not when they overvalue them. But you asked me the question, so yeah, I think Trevor Hoffman is dramatically overvalued.
Here's the pitch. There's a swing, and that is gapped into right center field. Over to cut it off is Guerrero. Here comes the throw in, and Castillo slides. He's out at the plate. The only chance Castillo thought he had was to slide to the back of the plate, try to hit it with his hand, but that's a pretty good gun out there named Vladimir Guerrero, and he had him dead to rights.
Yeah, more like a cannon, to tell you the truth. He ended up picking up that ball after a high hop. He threw the ball all the way on the fly to home plate to get the sliding Castillo. Actually, he got him by plenty. No chance.
No chance.
It's never too early to look towards next year, and the first-year ballot candidates for 2017 is a very interesting group. It includes Vladimir Guerrero, over 400 home runs and a rocket arm in right field. Manny Ramirez, more than 500 home runs, but the two positive drug tests. Ivan Rodriguez, who has been rumored, or has there been talks about PED use, even though he's a fantastic defensive catcher. Others being Magaly Ordóñez and Jorge Posada. Do you do any of the first-timers get in on the first try?
I think not, but I would throw the caveat in there that I don't really have a good feel for what's going to happen to Ivan Rodriguez. I feel like I know what's going to happen to Manny Ramirez. I mean, Manny is a couple of time loser on the PED front. You know, he's to me he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, when you look at his baseball career, but he's also a guy, and I do draw this distinction where he failed drug tests after it became very clear that this was a big no-no in baseball. I mean, that to me is the biggest issue with the Bonds-Clemens stuff. It's not like they didn't know it was wrong. Of course they did. But within the confines of baseball, nobody treated it like it was wrong. But by the time Manny Ramirez got caught, one of the times he got caught, was afterward. And so that was clearly a pretty major a major thing. So he's going to fall. I would imagine he'll be in the 30 to 40% range. That would be my guess. So he seems like a fairly easy one to pick. I think Posada's ball's a little short. I think Vlad Guerrero's going to, you know, he's going to have his supporters, but I think he's probably a guy that people are going to look at the way they look at Edgar Martinez, where it's going to be, he's going to have to build his case over time. But Ivan Rodriguez is one I don't know. I mean, there were certainly those that would make the argument that he's, you know, when you throw defense and offense together, he's in the upper echelon. I mean, top five catchers of all time. I think that's probably true. His PED things are very, it's kind of a weird PED case, you know, because they're whispers, but there also was that weird quote that he once gave, only God knows, or something like that, when he was asked about it. So I don't know what that's going to mean. I don't think he's going to be a first ballot guy, but to me, I think he's going to get close, and maybe I'm totally wrong about that. He's one that has me a little bit baffled, to be honest.
And now, taking everyone into consideration, if you had to make a prediction on who the writers will be electing next January, who gets in?
Well, two for sure. I mean, I think the Reigns is a lock. I've got to believe he was 69% this year, and that's his last year on the ballot, so he'll get a boost for that, just that alone. Plus, I think he's just been building his case very well over the last few years. So I think he'll get there and probably get there pretty close to 80%. I think Bagwell's going to get in. I think it's going to be a little bit closer, to be honest with you. He only was 15 votes short this year, so I got to believe he's going to get those votes. But, you know, with him, it's always I'm never quite sure what the writers think about him. It's a weird, weird deal with him. But I think he's going to get in. So those two guys are going to get in. Hoffman, to me, everything points to him getting in. So, you know, and I don't think that there's anybody that's coming on the ballot that's necessarily going to take his votes away. So I think he'll get in. But that to me, is the closest of the three, you know, because there will be the whole relief pitching thing is going to come up again. There's going to be a mini fight about that whole thing. And, you know, he could be a guy that falls short, just short, and gets elected in 2 years. But you'd have to say the trend points to those three guys getting in.
Well, based on your accuracy this year, I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
All right. It's great to talk to you once again, Joe. Thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.